about family and your children, you have a famous child, Heather Langenkamp. Yeah. Talk about her, because she's best known for a role as Nancy Thompson from A Nightmare on Elm Street films, served as executive producer, narrator of the documentary Never Sleep Again, The Elm Street Legacy. And did it ever dawn on you as she was growing up that she would be this accomplished?
Well, I knew she would be something fantastic because she was such a bright, energetic child. Of my children, she was the fastest out of the gate. She was hardworking, hard driving. She was a pretty good little athlete. She played tennis. She and I played in a bunch of tournaments. She was always at her best when she was challenged, and she was accepted to Harvard and Stanford, and, you know, she was a first-class student. In fact, she was at the National Cathedral School in Washington when I was up there in the Department of Energy. That's a school where all the senators' kids go. So she had all these really interesting young girls that were with her. In fact, one of her closest friends, the only one that really outdid her, Heather won a lot of prizes, but the one that outdid her and is now quite well known is Elizabeth Rice, who's now the ambassador to the United Nations, and she's Heather's age. So I was assumed Heather would go into government or law or something like that. Well, she was in Tulsa one summer, and she was working for the Tribune as a copy girl or something, and bored. And they came to town to make these movies. Coppola did.
Francis Ford Coppola.
Yeah. So anyway, she goes out to try out. And she was a pretty girl. She wasn't a 10, but she was a good solid 7.5 to 8, very wholesome. Anyway, she goes out there and meets one of the casting directors, a woman who I think has some connection with Oklahoma. Anyway, next she goes to Stanford, and then she gets a call at Stanford. Would you like to come down and try out for a movie? She goes down, and it's a movie called Nickel Mountain. It's never made anything other than HBO, but it's played a lot. It's a pretty good movie, but it never quite made the theaters. She had the lead in that, and based on that, she was asked to do the Nightmare series. And then based on Nightmare, she did another series and some specials. And all the time that she was doing this, she was flying back and forth to Stanford to go through Stanford. So she eventually graduated from Stanford, and she's married a fellow who has a company, or she and this fellow have a company called FX Studios. And they do everything from makeup to pretty good-sized special effects, like monsters and this sort of thing. Her husband is an artist. All these things you see, these monsters, all have to be sculpted. First they're sculpted out of clay, then they're converted into plastic, and then you have to have somebody get inside of them and operate them. They're in that business. They did some pretty important work in Tom Cruise's Mission Impossible. So that's the kind of stuff she does. And every once in a while she gets asked to have a part in a series or something, but now she's 43, 44, so she's out of the ingenue era and now in the middle-class woman.
So the movie that Francis Ford Coppola was producing here in Tulsa, what was the name of that movie?
I think that was Rumblefish. Outsiders?
Outsiders.
Yeah, in fact, I think she was in the movie, but I think it got cut. And if you're in a movie, unless you have a speaking line, you can't get a SAG card. You have to have a speaking line to get a SAG card. And I have a funny story there. You know, she got this role, and she went to get her SAG card. They said, what name do you want to act under? And she said, well, Heather Langenkamp. And the guy said, well, let me look and see if that's taken.
You had three other children?
The next one is a boy. His claim to fame was he became very proficient in Chinese, and he went over to Taiwan and married a Taiwanese girl. He has spent his life in Asia. He's now in Auckland running a small company he set up in Auckland. But his most unusual event was when he was going to a language school over in Taiwan, he and a friend, and this was way back when China was locked up tight as a drum, decided that they would try to go across China without permission. They put together mountain bikes and talked their way across the border on the assumption that they were just going to ride around Guilin and come right back out. Once the guy let them across the border in Guilin, they took off on their bikes and they went all the way to Kathmandu. Over 3,000 miles, and of course they were illegal the whole time. It gave me an interesting perspective, the Chinese, because in a way the Chinese are much more civilized than some people give them credit for. They would periodically get arrested, and generally when they got arrested, they would tell them, just head on out, let's just get out of my town tomorrow. And then lots of times they were wined and dined by the mayor of these towns because the Chinese have been relocating the Han Chinese. These are the basic Chinese all through Tibet and western China. They keep moving the Han Chinese in, trying to repopulate the area with Hans. So they'd go through these western village, and of course they spoke Mandarin. One time the mayor invited them to dinner because it'd been so long since he'd been able to speak Mandarin to someone. And that happened to them several times. So anyway, he went all the way to Kathmandu. Then he became an investment banker over there in Hong Kong. He went through two or three different companies.
His name?
His name is Matthew.
Okay.
Matthew Langenkamp. Matthew went to George Washington, and it was Phi Beta Kappa there, which I thought was great. He's got two children. His younger brother is named Dan. Daniel went to Columbia. He got out and joined the Peace Corps and went to Hungary, taught English. He got out of there, and then he went to work for Reuters for a while. Then he went back and got an international relations degree from Tufts and then joined the State Department and married a girl who was in his class at the State Department. He's 40. He's been to Afghanistan, where he got a medal. He slept on the ground and traveled around. The name of the game is to sit on your flak jacket, because when you drive over one of those IEDs, they come up through the bomb. He had this tour in Vietnam, Afghanistan, Iraq, and Uganda.
With the
State Department. He's a Foreign Service officer. Now he's on the Turkey desk. His wife is on the NATO desk.
And then your last one.
His last one is Lucy. Daniel and Matt both graduated from Booker T. Washington. That was the formative years for them, and I'm very fond of Booker T. Washington. I think it was a great school. And Lucinda, she ended up going to a school in Washington like my first daughter did, because I was back there at that time. She is now a nurse practitioner, and she is a pretty good artist. She has a statue that's in front of the Fine Arts Building in Vanderbilt that she sculpted. She's a pretty good actress. She had the lead in a summer stock in Massachusetts last summer in Shakespeare's As You Like It. And she studied art in Tibet for a year and came back with a couple of Tibetan-style paintings, which were amazing. Then she went through nursing school and got a master's in nursing, and now she's running a clinic in Brooklyn. You know, they're now moving those nurse practitioners into line as doctors. The last time I went to a doctor, they steered me to a nurse practitioner. Only here in Oklahoma, they don't call them nurse practitioners. They call them physician's assistants. But basically, they're permitted to write prescriptions.
It's a pretty eclectic family. And we point out that you're married today to your wife, Sandra. You've been married for how many years
now? Well, since 95 or something like that.
Then you think about these four children and how accomplished they are, and of course you too. And then you think about what you've talked about, your grandparents, their great-grandparents, and how they were very smart, but they had to fight tooth and nail for their survival, so that eventually we have this great generation that's followed them. That's a great story.
Yeah, I think there are thousands of these stories. I mean, I don't think people realize how many people who in 1935, particularly down in this part of the country, my friends don't realize how much people struggle. My grandmother, the one that was the teacher out there at Mingo, a one-room schoolhouse, she got paid with warrants.
Paid with what warrant?
Warrants. Basically, a warrant was a promissory note from the school board that you would have to discount. So you'd take the warrant to the bank, and the bank would give you 80 cents on the dollar for the warrant. Otherwise, you had to hold it. My grandmother, this is a woman who was college educated, the one who would deliver these one-act plays and all this. She had a cow, and they had 20 chickens in a garden. And the cow and the chickens in the garden were extremely critical to their existence.
And now here today, you're 75?
75.
You're writing poems.
Mm-hmm.
You brought me a couple of plays here that
nobody has put on.
And this book of poetry, Plenty of Gun, and probably have more in the mill.
I have one more, and it's going to be entitled The One Monkey Zoo. The title poem is about a zoo we had down in Seminole that consisted of one animal, and it was a little monkey on a chain.